Good evening and welcome to this interview with the Mandla magazine. We want to welcome Gilbert Ashkar, Emeritus Professor at SOAS University of London and longtime socialist activist and commentator on the Middle East. Gilbert, you've written extensively on the Middle East over a long period and of course about the genocide in Gaza and the West Bank. So we've invited you to discuss the implications of the ceasefire deal, which has just come into force in Gaza, and the process that is supposed to unfold from here. All this, as you mentioned when we were talking offline, in the light of the new Trump presidency. So firstly, it was striking at the handover of the Israeli hostages, the display of force from Hamas, who clearly wanted to show they're still alive, despite the Israelis' avowed intention to wipe them out. Is this then a Hamas victory, as some would like to claim?
Well, as someone put it, if victory looks like this, how does defeat look like? I mean, to claim victory under the circumstances is actually, to be frank, indecent. I find no other word to call that. Because when you've lost tens of thousands, if not actually hundreds of thousands, because a serious estimate of the number of victims, of people killed due to this onslaught, this genocidal war, would be beyond 200,000 if you take the number of people directly killed and those indirectly killed. And if you take into account the utter destruction of the whole, I mean, everybody is seeing now scenes on television of this landscape, lunar landscape. I mean, it looks like, you know, craters and things like that. It's completely devastated, destroyed. When you think of all this, when you think of the fact that part of Hamas survived in the tunnels because they, I mean, Israel has not yet been able to dismantle all the tunnels that Hamas had created. For itself, not for the civilian population, but just for its own members. When you boast of that as victory, this is really indecent. No, it isn't. Of course, the idea that Hamas would be completely eradicated was irrational from the start, and many people underlined this, including many Israeli commentators, that you can't eradicate an organization of this size. But of course, Hamas had been dealt a hugely severe blow. It has lost many thousands of its members. Its military capacity has been, to a very large extent, destroyed. They still have some rockets in the tunnels, and every now and then they can fire a couple of them over the border, over the fence or the previous fence, but that won't change the fact that if you compare today with what you had before October 7, I mean, there is no hesitation to have about assessing the situation. Before that, you had a kind of self-government in Gaza, which has been there since 2007 in the form of Hamas government. Even Hamas, the sworn enemy of Israel, was in charge of the stripe. And now what you have? You have had a reoccupation by the Israeli army and this genocide committed. And anyone believing that the Israeli army will just withdraw from Gaza and hand it over to Hamas, as Hamas seems to believe, is just fully, fully delusory. They are just deluding themselves. I'm not hearing you. Yes.
So we've all seen, I'm sure, apologies. We've all seen, I'm sure, the Gazans going back into this absolutely devastated landscape that you describe. And the question really is, in my mind, they're going back there now, but and there is a ceasefire now, but does Israel's internal politics allow Netanyahu to continue with this ceasefire after the so-called phase one? Or is this just a pause in order to go back to full-scale military action because that's necessary to save his political life?
Indeed, what happened is just a truce. No more. That's not peace. That's just a truce, a provisional one, a pause, as you said. I mean, there is hardly anyone who is convinced that it will go beyond phase one, and certainly not Netanyahu, who promised to Smotrich that it won't go beyond phase one. Who promised the same to Ben-Gvir? Ben-Gvir, I mean, I'm speaking here of the two very far right, the two neo-Nazi members of the Israeli cabinet. And Ben-Gvir nevertheless resigned his position, but pledged to keep supporting Netanyahu in the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, and to be, I mean, to join the cabinet again. Once the war resumes. So, and even Donald Trump, who was asked yesterday if he believed that that the ceasefire would hold, and he said, "I don't know. It's their war, it's not ours." So, I mean, you see clearly where things are heading. This was, I mean, this truce was implemented for two reasons. One of them is the pressure in Israeli society about the hostages, and even the Israeli army was relaying that pressure. And on the other hand, to please Trump, who wanted some kind of, achievement he could boast of just before his inauguration, right? And that what he did. We saw how he exploited this issue. And that's it. Beyond that, as I said, anyone believing that the Israeli army will withdraw from Gaza and just hand it over to whichever government is in place, and worse of all, from the Israeli point of view, to Hamas, is just completely dreaming. It's not even a dream. It's almost hallucination. How to call that? So no, I mean they won't go to phase two, and anyway, there is no way that anyone from the Trump administration to Netanyahu to the Israeli opposition would tolerate Hamas back in charge of Gaza. That's out of the question. First of all, the Israeli army will keep its security military control of the strip. Secondly, the let's say the best case scenario compared to the worst case scenario, which is pure annexation of the strip and of the West Bank, and let's say I mean completion of the Nakba by the expulsion of the population, which, I mean, this is what the neo-Nazis, the Zionist neo-Nazis want. I mean, this is the worst case scenario. The best case scenario is Trump's deal of the century, which is offering a Swiss cheese of a patchwork of disconnected, populated Palestinian
What we know
territories.
from South Africa, Bantustans, effectively.
Ex No. Yes, one Bantustan, but a patchwork of disconnected, populated areas in the West Bank, and they would do the same in Gaza, and call that a Palestinian state, which would be controlled by Arab troops, especially from the United Arab Emirates, the great friends of Donald Trump, along with the Saudis. The United Arab Emirates is very active on that, and they pledge to send forces to help controlling the strip. So that's the best case scenario, and this is well, of course, it's anything but liberation for the Palestinians. That would be I mean, actually worse than a Bantustan. You mentioned Bantustan, but Bantustans had on the face of it some kind of self-government. No, here we're speaking of areas completely subdued and controlled by, directly by the Israeli army. You know, that's what you're heading towards.
Yeah, I was going to ask you because I mean, it's clear that already in the last few days there are increased signs of aggression in the West Bank in the light of the Trump presidency. Much of Gaza is uninhabitable. Where is this leading? You talk about best case and worst case scenarios. Where is this
Yeah,
process?
absolutely. You're very right to mention the fact that the very day this ceasefire got implemented, you had a new onslaught of the Israeli army on Jenin and the West Bank, on the Jenin camp. And the same Jenin camp, which had been targeted by the Palestinian Authority, which is a kind of proxy government for the occupation, or behaving as a proxy government, more and more behaving as a proxy government for the occupation, but I mean attacking the same Jenin camp, which has become a stronghold of resistance against the Israeli occupation and the settlers' activities. And then you have had this attack by the settler, very vicious attack by masked settlers. Well, you know, they immediately called the 7 October attack by Hamas a pogrom, but these things look very much more like pogroms that the settlers are doing in the West Bank. And connect to that the fact that one of the first executive orders of Donald Trump was to remove the sanctions on the settlers that even the very Zionist Joe Biden had pushed forward. You know, Joe Biden is a Zionist, but he is closer to the mainstream Zionists than to the Zionist far right. Trump is closer to the Zionist far right, and his team is some of his team is to the right of Benjamin Netanyahu himself, and that's saying a lot.
That's saying a huge amount. If we step back from this and look at the region, there are those who say that Trump wants to see an extension of the Abraham Accords to Saudi Arabia. The price for that might be some form of Palestinian state, which of course Netanyahu rejects. So, what is going to come out, do you see, of this equation, taking Iran into the equation as well? How do you see all of this unfolding over the next period of time?
I think that Netanyahu will go for this Palestinian state. You know, people forget that Netanyahu endorsed the so-called deal of the century that I mentioned, the one that Trump, or more precisely, Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who is also very much a Zionist, this is what the plan that they drew. At that time in 2020, when this was put forward, even Mahmoud Abbas, this how to say, Quisling-like so-called Palestinian Authority, rejected that because they found it absolutely unacceptable. From the, you know, it doesn't mean even the very minimal basic requirements of even the Palestinian Authority, not to mention the Palestinian cause in general, right? And so, I mean, Netanyahu will not go back on his position. He will go along with Trump and with the United Arab Emirates. They will do something that fits very much with Israel's interest, and that will be the prelude for the peace with the Saudi Kingdom. And they all see, and especially the Trump organization, the Trump family, see a lot of business that they will be able to do with all that. We know that you have already plans for towers in all the Gulf countries, Trump Towers. Trump Towers, Trump Hotels, and all that. There has been an economic journal recently published a list, and this is amazing, of what exists already and what is planned for. So, I mean, you have in the United States a government that has, I mean, is the equivalent of what used to be called in US history the robber barons, now in power. I mean, we have never seen such a degree of it's not collaboration, it's one and the same. We haven't seen any kind of control by directly, I mean, by private interest represented in the president himself of the United States, the most powerful state on earth. And this is a calamity. I mean, we are living through a really extremely worrying period. The equivalent for the 21st century, with different forms of the 1930s, the interwar years of the previous century, we are witnessing a global rise of the far right, of neo-fascism, of neo-Nazism, even in some cases. And of course, this is very tough time. And of course, all the progressive forces must really take this issue extremely seriously, because now it involves again the future of humanity is at stake, even more so than in the 20th century, because of the climate issue, because of the nuclear issues. And we know that Netanyahu is betting on Trump to join him in a strike on nuclear installations in Iran. So we are really living through extremely dangerous times, and really we should, I mean, we should fight back with everything we have, because really, I mean, the alternative is we're there. We're there in barbarism.
Thanks. I suppose it was too much to hope for a hopeful ending to this interview. We are, as you say, in very dark times, and it's time for us to look at how we can defend some of the basic freedoms that we still enjoy.
Sure, Roger,
Michael,
but
thank you.
I would say it is hopeful, but it is not optimistic. Okay? So we keep this combination of, well-known pessimism of the intellect. We see things as they are, we are realists, but at the same time, we fight back. And that's where the optimism of the will comes into the picture.
Gilbert, thank you very much for your time and for your review of the situation in the Middle East. Thank you.
My pleasure, Roger. All the best.
Thanks. Bye.